जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी 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 गोपी जान वाला जय गिरीवर धारी जय गिरीवर धारी गोपीजन वल्लभ जय गोपी जन वल्लभ जय गिरीवर धारी जय गिरीवर धारी गोपी जन जय जशोधनंदन जय व्रज जन रंजन जय जशोधनंदन जय व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी जय गिरीवर धारी जय गिरीवर धारी यमुना तीरावन यमुना तीरावन चारी जय कुंज बिहारी जय कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare Krishna Krishna Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki Nithai Gaur Premanande Hari 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 Bol So, Hare Krishna. This is the Srimad Bhagavatam class broadcasting live from Sri Radha Kalachandi Dham in Dallas, Texas. I know we have listeners certainly in the local area, but also internationally. Hare Bol. So, thank you for those who follow the Dallas Bhagavatam class as one of your lifelines of sadhana, Paramakaruna and Alachua, Gopish Prabhu, Nuvindavan, Mother Sukshma Rupini in transit all over the place. Anyway, so many devotees, so thank you all for tuning in. We are reading today from Canto 11, Chapter 18, Verse 27. Continuing the description of Varnashram Dharma. Yadita Datmani Jagan Manovak Prana Sanghatam Sarvang Mayeti Tarkena Svastastyaktvana tatsmaret Yadita datmani jagan Mano vak prana sanghatam Sarvang mayeti tarkena Svastastyaktvana tatsmaret Yadita datmani jagan Mano vak prana sanghatam Sarvang mayeti tarkena Svastastyaktvana tatsmaret Please chant. Yadita datmani jagan మనో వాక్ ప్రాణ సంహతం సర్వం మాయేతి తర్కేణ స్వస్తస్త్యక్త్వా న తత్ స్మరేత్. Actually, quickly before we do the word for word, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. All right, so we'll do for the word for word. Please repeat. Yat, which, etat, this, Atmani, in the Supreme Lord, Jagat, universe, Mana, of the mind, Vak, speech, Prana, and life air, Sangatam, formed, Sarvam, all, Maya, material illusion, Iti, thus, Tarkena, by logic, Swastaha, fixed in the self, Tyaktva, giving up, Na, never, Tat, that, Smaret, one should remember. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. One should logically consider the universe, which is situated within the Lord, and one's own material body, which is composed of mind, speech, and life air, to be ultimately products of the Lord's illusory energy. Thus situated in the self, one should give up one's faith in these things and should never again make them the object of one's meditation. Please repeat. One should logically consider the universe, which is situated within the Lord, and one's own material body, which is composed of mind, speech, and life air, to be ultimately products of the Lord's illusory energy. Thus situated in the self, one should give up one's faith in these things and should never again make them the object of one's meditation. Purport. Every conditioned soul considers the material world to be the object of his personal sense gratification and therefore considers the material body to be his actual identity. The word tyaktva indicates that one must give up one's false identification with the material world and the material body, since both are merely products of the illusory potency of the Lord. One should never again meditate on the material world and body as objects of sense gratification, but rather should become situated in Krishna consciousness. Looking at things from the eternal point of view, this world is simply illusory. The material energy of the Lord is devoid of consciousness and thus cannot be the basis of actual happiness. The Supreme Lord Himself is the only absolutely conscious entity. He is absolutely self-sufficient, standing alone as Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. Only Vishnu and not the insignificant workings of material nature can give us the actual perfection of life. Om Jnanati Manandasya Ganandana Shalakaya Chakshuninmitam Nena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namah Vishnu Padaye Krishna Prishtaye Bhutare Smriti Bhakti Charu Swam Niti Navane Srikina Setu Suparinita Vagina Vanjara Sakudam Prabhupada Gata Pranam Nami Bhakti Charu Param Namah Vishnu Padaye Krishna Prishtaye Bhutare Smriti Bhakti Vedanta Swam Niti Navane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharini Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pashatya Deshatarini Jai. So I thought we would approach this verse. Well, one, it's sort of setting up, I thought was an interesting way of thinking about our situation. It's talking about the universe and then our material body in it, and the verses pinpointing mind, speech, and life air. So I thought that's kind of interesting to choose those three as making up our material body. So we'll talk about the why that setup maybe makes sense. And then we'll talk about the advice of this verse to stop thinking of these things, why that's good and why we should follow it. And then the last part will be how to follow it, which is a little bit more tricky. Easier said than done, as they say. So I thought the setup was appropriate because if you think about it, I mean, now this verse is positing that there's the universe and then our material body, which is mind, speech, and life air. Those are the three components. Of course, we know there's so many ways to list the material body, the five gross elements, the five subtle elements, the 10 senses. So there's so many things. But this is interesting. It chooses these three. But I thought that makes sense. Because essentially, what is our project here in this world? So we have the mind. The mind has various desires, thinking, feeling, and willing. This is its function, has desires. And then we act on those desires primarily in two ways. We do something physical with our body. So we manipulate the material universe that's out there, right? So our mind's considering the universe and thinking, okay, how can I extract some pleasure from this universe there? And then the mind, when it comes up with a desire, then it wills. And it wills to act through the physical body, which we could say is coming from the life air, or through words. So much action we do through words. I think the mind, that's sort of self-explanatory, right? We have the mind, and it just has thoughts and desires all the time, and it never stops, and it never stops, and it never stops. And that's the point of yoga, is to actually get the mind a little under control. But I thought this is interesting. Why choose life, air, and speech as our kind of the important components of the body? So these, there's five airs within the body, and you can kind of think of the body, I think Rindusri Prabhu talks about it, as a pneumatic machine. I mean, it's basically these airs are what allow us to kind of function and keep things going. The prana, which is what's mentioned here, and that's chief among the five airs. That's really what, when you breathe in, you're getting that life force, the prana, and which gives you energy. The apana is another of the life airs that helps you eliminate waste products. Udana is what allows sounds to emanate, the vocal cords vibrating. Samana is the air involved in digestion. And then vyana, which has to do with muscle movements, circulatory system and such. So the soul sort of floats on these airs, and the prana is chief. And so it makes sense to think of that as an important component of the body, because that's really how physically we're acting. That's how physically we're acting. Let's see what verse. Yeah, and if anyone's curious, you can look at Canto 3, Chapter 6, Verse 9. 369 in the purport, Prabhupada talks about these airs, these different airs. And then there's kind of subtler airs. So you can refer to that. But basically, these airs are what allow us to move and do things. And prana is also connected with vayu. and you see the various sons of Vayu. They're very strong. If there was a live audience, I would quiz you to name some sons of Vayu. But I will supply them for you. Hanuman, right? Son of Vayu. So why is he so strong? Because this Vayu, this Pran, is the strength, is the life force. Another son of Vayu. Anyone? Going once, going twice. Bhima. Actually, we talked about this, came up at the TKG Academy recently, and I forget who was thought of one I had even forgotten about with it, which is Madhvacharya, another incarnation or son of the wind, and so very strong, very physically strong. So that's the setup. You have your mind, and then how you're doing your physical things is through prana, through the life airs. That's why we have these. Prana is synonymous with life force. So you have devotees with these names. Prabhupada Prana. Prana Gauranga. The life of Prabhupada. The life of Gauranga. And then you have the when we sing these deities, glorifications, right? Prabhupada Prandanahe. This deities is the wealth of the life of Srila Prabhupada and various Goswamis, right? We'll sing a deities. Radha Damodar, right? Jeev Goswami Prandanahe. These deities are the treasure of the life of Jeeva Goswami. All right, so that's prana. Then I thought the other thing is this speech. The other way we kind of act on the world. So we talk too much. We talk way too much. The Upadesha Amrita, the first verse, is a nectar of instruction. Talks about these various urges, these various pushings. And the first one is Vacho Vegam. Manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udarapasta vegam, tan vegan yo vishaheta dira. Actually, someone who controls these six urges is fit to be prithavim sasishyat, spiritual master of the whole world. The first one is vacho vegam. It's the urge to speak. The urge to speak. So we must control that. We must control that. Because that's usually we give in to it a little too easily. A little too easily. And it causes so much effect. Let's say the pen is mightier than the sword, right? So the pen is the written word. Emails sent before thinking twice. Many problems. And so Krishna recommends, I'm helping teach this chess club at our Gurukul TKG Academy. So we talked about this as one of the guiding principles is in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17, verse 15. Krishna talks about austerity of speech. He says it consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others. So our social relations would be much improved if we could consider before we say something or write something, is it truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others? Because a lot of what we say fails this test. Prabhupada talks about this one lecture, and then also there's a purport. He says it's just the... It's like the croaking of the frog, and it's just calling death. Like the frog is making sounds, and the snake All the croaking does is help the snake find the frog. So similarly, yeah, in this one, he's in Mayapur or something. He's saying, yeah, these frogs, kokoroko, kokoroko, you know. But the black snake of death is coming while we are wasting our time. Speaking too much. Yeah, I was thinking, I was at this place in upstate New York. It's actually pretty close to Stuyvesant Falls, where there's some different sannyasis or movement stay, and then actually they host some sort of kirtan. It's called the Omega Institute. They hold a kirtan thing, I think, Labor Day weekend. Radhanath Swami, some other sannyasis there. But I went to some kirtan program they had, and you know, they would chant something, and then right after it ended, silence. So it's actually quite nice. If you see, sometimes if you have a nice kirtan, there's so much energy generated. It's nice if right when it ends, we could be quiet and just live in that space that we've created. But it takes some discipline. Our tendency is to immediately start talking again. But actually, I mean, we can try this. Of course, the bigger the group, the more you have to get everybody on board. But after you chant it, it's a meditation after all, right? It's a spiritual process. It's not just idle chatter. So it has Shakti, and it moves you. You know, just when it's done, you know, when it's done, do the Prema Dhvani prayers, and then just sit and absorb that. Also, I remember inviting, I had a devotee over for prasadam some years ago. And then, you know, usually you kind of eat and talk, whatever. But I could see that he just wanted to enjoy the prasadam. And actually Prabhupada would do this also. He would have prasadam alone. He wouldn't even have with other people. And you can listen to his personal servants. They would talk about how he would just relish, just be absorbed. So just my observation. I mean, I'm a talkative person myself, so it's advice to myself as well. That maybe we can talk less. Maybe we can talk less, especially certain times. But anyways, this is another way we're acting on the world. Maybe more powerful than the physical acts, right? How much can we physically do? But our words, they go everywhere, right? So Bhaktisiddhanta, there's the mridanga. How many people hear that? But Brihat Mridanga is books. They just go everywhere. So similarly, our emails and here, right? I'm broadcasting. It's going so many places. So I thought this setup is actually kind of reasonable. This makes sense that to focus on, well, material body is basically the mind, speech, and life air. Mind's thinking all these things and then throwing out words and throwing out physical actions and trying to affect this material universe and extract some pleasure out of it. All right, so that's the setup. The advice given in this verse is to stop thinking of these things, to consider that through our logic, that it's just illusory energy. So before we get to kind of how to do this, again, does that make sense? Yes, right? Because this doing, this I am the doer is actually what keeps us here, right? The most subtle material element, the first one to be formed, and the thing that links us to the material energy is ahankar. Literally, ahamkar, right? I am the doer. This is what links us here. I am the doer. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. This is chapter 3. That actually the modes are doing everything. The modes of material nature, but we think we're the doer. And this is actually our disease. This is actually our disease. And what we're supposed to get to, the stage, is in chapter 5 at Bhagavad Gita, one of my favorite chapters, probably my favorite chapter, right? There's a verse, 8 and 9 in chapter 5. A person in the divine consciousness, although engaged in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving about, sleeping, and breathing, always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. So this is actually the realization of the advanced soul, one who is self-realized, that they're not acting. And to get over this ahamkar, So it is indeed the cure if we can get over this idea that there's a universe and I'm here and I'm just going to act on it and extract these pleasures. But it's difficult. It's difficult here. So for example, here's a couple. Because who's speaking here? Is it Narad Muni? Is it Krishna speaking to Uddhava? Let's see here. Chapter 18. Okay, yeah, Krishna's explaining to Uddhava, right? So, Krishna's saying it. Okay, yeah, use your logic, and this is just Maya, and so stop thinking about it. So it sounds like good advice. Basically, he's saying, get over it. This little game you're playing here, get over it. So it's good advice, but it's like, thanks, Krishna. Right? I should just stop. So let me give an example, that perhaps the men might be able to relate to more. But, in case we're not convinced that maybe this is a little bit difficult. This is 4th canto, 25th chapter, verse 24. In the purport, there's two purports where Prabhupada refers to, yeah, he's referring to a saying by Shankaracharya. One should not be attracted by this is in the purport, breasts of young women. The great saint Shankaracharya has described the breasts of women, especially young women, as nothing but a combination of muscles and blood. So one should not be attracted by the illusory energy of raised breasts with nipples. And he has a similar reference in 3:23:36. Again, referring, Sripad Shankaracharya has therefore warned the transcendentalists that one who is after transcendental realization should not be attracted by the raised breasts of a woman because they are nothing but an interaction of fat and blood within the body. So is that enough? If there was men in the room, I would take a poll. So we have been instructed that it's just fat and blood. So now we're done, right? No more attraction. We're ready to take sannyas. Bus. No, right? Yeah, right. See, that's good. Thank you. See, Mother Kuti's here, my one audience member. Yeah, right. Exactly, right? It's just sort of, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, right? It. What am I supposed to do with that? So is Krishna a fanatic? Is Krishna here? Is he just an unrealistic, repressed person just saying, yeah, it's just get over it. It's just Maya. Come on, use your logic, Prabhu. No, of course he's not a fanatic. Of course he's not a fanatic. Hridayananda Maharaj talks about Krishna as the supreme personality of personal trainer. And he says that we are reluctant to trust Krishna because we're afraid that he is a fanatic and he doesn't get us, he doesn't get our struggles, And he's going to ask us to do things that are just unreasonable. But this is ridiculous. He is Paramatma. He knows where you're at. He knows what you're capable of. And he's not going to give you ridiculous instructions. So let's try to understand what to do with his instruction here. The truth is that it's the beginning and the end. It's the beginning and the end. So that at least the very beginning is to understand it intellectually, right? Because if you don't even believe in theory that, oh, the material, the world is illusion, right? And that you're trying to extract pleasure, but you'll never get it. You're like a fish out of water. If you don't even accept that in theory, why would you even try to fix it? If you think, oh no, there's genuine pleasure to be had. Let me continue. So the beginning is at least to accept it in theory, which is gyan. This is the stage of gyan. At least accept it in theory. And then the end is vigyan. So, for example, I bring out, somehow I'm always using cheesecake as an example in my classes. I don't know why. Maybe I have some secret desire to eat lots of cheesecake. Anyways, so there's a nice piece of blueberry cheesecake. Somebody brings it to you in a plate, right? And you're like, wow, that looks great. I am ready to honor that prasad, right? Honor that prasad. But then somebody else says, no, Mataji, that just came from the trash. I saw. It was thrown away accidentally and someone had to remove it. And it wasn't an empty trash can. And they kind of cleaned it up nicely. So you can't tell, but it's from the trash. So it looks fine. It looks fine. So for most of us, will that stop you? Will that stop you? I don't know. Maybe if you're really sense controlled, you're really intelligent, right? That would be enough. But it's like, it looks fine. It looks fine. So that gyan is not enough. The ultimate stage of vigyan is realization. So in that example would be, if you saw it come out of the trash, right? Then it'll be easier. Because you saw the trash, you saw the stuff that's in there. So then when you're looking at it later, you're like, oh man, that's the piece of cheesecake I saw come out of the trash. That will be easier to control because you have some realization. So the idea is we can't force this artificially, right? I mean, you could go think, oh, I'm the body. I don't need food. So you're just, okay, I'm not going to eat anymore. I don't actually need food. I'll be a Goswami. I'll have a little bit of buttermilk every day, right? Because I'm not the body. But then you're just going to go crazy and then put your head in the hull of a bucket, you know, and swim in it because it's not realized knowledge. It's not realized knowledge. So if we accept that it's the beginning to consider this intellectually and have logic, and that ultimately it's also intellectual because you realize it, you fully see it and feel it, so it's not artificial. The question is, how do we get there? How do we get there? From that beginning of just theoretical knowledge, but it still hasn't processed to kind of full realization. And so again, chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita is very nice in this regard. Sort of gives us the hint, the clue of how to do this. So we'd started with 8 and 9, right, talking about kind of the goal. Self-realized person just sees it's just the modes. So let me read some other translations from there. One who performs his duty without attachment, surrendering the results unto the Supreme Lord, is unaffected by sinful action as the lotus leaf is untouched by water. This next one, 5:11, one of my all-time favorite verses. The yogis, abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses only, for the purpose of purification. 12, the steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace,
because he offers the results of all activities to me, whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy of the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. And 16, when, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nations are destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So that's the ultimate goal, is you actually see it. It's just so obvious. It's not theoretical knowledge. You see it just like the sun has finally come up, and you see everything as it is. But the intermediate process is you continue to act. You continue to act. So this verse, it doesn't mean that you think, oh, this is Maya. Logically, I'm considering, here's the universe, and I'm this body. So why am I thinking about doing things that you just immediately just turn it off? Because again, this stage is talking about Varnashram, and here we're getting at the Vanaprastha stage. So this is after you've gone through this whole Grihastha period. So what happens during that Grihastha period that allows you to start to approach the goal, which is actually giving up this engagement at the Vanaprastha or Sannyasa stage, is that you do act, but you act with different consciousness. I mean, this is the sum and substance of the message of Bhagavad Gita, and this is the contribution of the Krishna consciousness movement to the world. There's already religion out there. There's plenty of people talking about how to act and enjoy, and there's plenty of people and scriptures talking about how to renounce and go be a hermit, go be a monk. What there is a dearth of is spiritual instruction on how to continue acting in the world, but for the purpose of purification, with detachment, with a different consciousness. And I mean, the summary of this is to somehow connect it with Krishna. So you're still going to eat, but it's Krishna prasadam. So you've connected it with Krishna. You've offered it, and you're trying to meditate to some extent when you're eating that, how this is connected with Krishna, right? Lord Chaitanya is thinking, oh, this has so many, we've always had these foods, but I'm experiencing these new flavors. So this must be because there's the nectar of Krishna's lips here. We have children. I mean, what takes up more of your time and life energy than raising kids, right? But you connect it with Krishna. You give them nice Krishna conscious name. You impart Krishna consciousness to them. You engage as a family in Krishna consciousness activities. And deep in your heart, you consider, I mean, inevitably, you'll experience the pains and the pleasures, both of raising kids, but in your heart, it's out of a sense of duty. If you can keep that in mind, so you're still doing everything you're doing, you don't artificially neglect your children, that's foolishness. But you also don't dive in head first and just think, this is all about me, and I want to just extract pleasure from these children. You try to have a mentality of duty. So you're doing the same actions that everyone else is doing. In theory, you're doing it better, because once you've dropped the selfish agenda, or at least you're trying to restrict it, when you act out of duty, it's going to be more selfless. So you act out of duty, that is offering to Krishna, and you realize that actually, ultimately, everything that you're doing is to purify yourself. So if you can maintain this consciousness while you're doing things, and the only way you'll be able to maintain that consciousness is if you keep up your sadhana, you're doing your rounds, you're coming, you're hearing shastra, that will allow you to maintain that consciousness while you do all your material activities, going to your job. Oh my gosh, 8 hours a day, I'm seeing these people more than I see my family, more than I'm seeing the devotees. What kind of hell have I been sentenced to? Really, Krishna, I have to spend all my time? I better be doing my sadhana. I better associate with devotees when I get a chance, because then when I'm at that job, I'll be able to have the right consciousness to spiritualize it. To think, oh, why am I doing this? Okay, it's actually for Krishna. To use opportunities with coworkers to perhaps dialogue about Krishna, to use lunch breaks or other breaks to listen to some shastra, do some japa. So the idea is this in-between phase. I mean, to kind of put this in context again of this verse, Krishna's advising by your logic. Consider, hey, this is Maya. You combination of mind, speech, and life, air. You have these desires, and you're trying to act on this universe. It's all the illusory energy. Stop thinking about it. Get over it. Right? So that's his advice. It is good advice, because ultimately that is what we need to do, because it is illusion. At first, we take that knowledge as theoretical, so it motivates us to take up the process of bhakti yoga. And we know ultimately the goal will be, we'll have vijnan of this. We'll actually see it. We'll see it. And it won't be artificial. We'll know the cheesecake is from the trash, so we won't be attracted to it. It won't be artificial. We'll just be like, no thank you. And the process in between that stage of jnan to vijnan is to continue acting. So you're continuing doing the action that we know is kind of illusory, right? You aren't the material body, but you're going to act with it. And we know the material energy, that's temporary, and it doesn't actually provide pleasure, but we're still going to interact with it. But the difference is, we're going to do it with a sense of duty, that the purpose is purification. We're going to inject Krishna into it, connect our activities with Krishna, and proceed with a different consciousness, a different goal, and powered by our sadhana, powered by our sadhana. And if we do that, then we can be confident that when it comes time for us to disengage and take vanaprastha, that we will actually be able to take up this instruction of Krishna in maturity and in reality, and really realize our spiritual nature. All right, so that's my thoughts on this verse. Thanks everyone for their attention. If you have questions, I guess email me, navin108@gmail.com. navin108@gmail.com. Or if you just want to say, hey, I listened to your class, Prabhu, that is always appreciated as well. All right. Did you have any questions, Mother? Oh, okay. Well, here. You can talk in this mic, Mother Kunti.
It's not working. First question has to do with your advice about not talking so much. And actually, austerity of speech is described as only speaking about Radha, Sri Radha and Krishna, and only speaking about the glories of the pure devotees of Shishi Gornitai, Radha Krishna. So it's kind of a comment question. The second one was about the cheesecake that was found in the trash can. I had that happen. I actually had that happen. So what? Somebody found a piece of cheesecake in the trash can. Someone was gluten or lactose intolerant or something and actually tossed it in the trash. And they brought it to me, Mother Kunti, what do you think about this? And I pinched a tiny bit and I honored it. And I said, that's all for me. But we have to respect it no matter what, even if it's found in the trash. In fact, our spiritual master, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was one of his favorite proclivities was to stand by the trash can after the Sunday feast and collect the uneaten samosas, which he would keep in a top drawer, and anyone who was really struggling, they would get a samosa. So just a comment. And also, if you could maybe elaborate more on speaking, but speaking about, I mean, because speaking is going to happen, but just help, maybe give us some guidelines or tips how to discipline ourselves to speak about Sri Sri Radha and Krishna.
Thank you. So, this is true. So, of course, as devotees on the transcendental platform, if it's prasadam, right, it can never be contaminated. So you will honor the cheesecake from the trash. But now you've connected it with Krishna, right? So now it's out of duty. Right? Out of responsibility, because you're supposed to honor prasadam and thinking of Krishna and for the purpose of purification. So this is a, thank you Mother Kuti for this illustration, right? So the same activity which you would have done just out of sense gratification, like even knowing, oh my God, it's from the trash, that's disgusting, but I just love cheesecake and I didn't see it, so I'm just going to eat it. Now you're doing it with Krishna in mind, out of duty, for the purpose of purification. So very nice, right? Change in consciousness, same activity. Now it's liberating you. Yes, this restricting speech. You know, we have so many high standards that what I find is a step approach. You know, otherwise it's not manageable. I mean, even when... So my parents grew up in India, vegetarian. My dad went to like a vegetarian college. Then they came to the U.S. This is, you know, way back in the 70s. And there was just, I mean, it was new, people from India coming to America. And they just kind of thought, oh, you just do everything. So completely dropped vegetarianism. We were going steakhouses and things, Hare Krishna. But it was funny, and all the while actually going to ISKCON temple. So finally... actually, we're going to Laguna Beach when Buddha Harper was the president. So I finally preached to my parents. He's like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be Hindu. And then they're like, yeah, that's true. We grew up like that. I don't know why we just came to America. We just thought. Anyway, so then, and I remember this was when I was maybe in like junior high or something. And then they said, okay, we're not going to eat beef anymore. That was like, at least they thought, okay, we're Hindus, for crying out loud. What are we doing? So then I was actually the first to become vegetarian in my family. And then how I did it was I actually dropped one meat at a time. I thought, okay, beef was already done. So, okay, I'm going to drop pork. I don't eat that much anyways, right? Okay, then I did fish. And then I was stuck on chicken for a while. And then because my friends, we'd go out to eat all the time. You could always find a chicken sandwich, you know, whatever. So I got stuck on that. Finally, I gave that up. So, but the point was like this step approach, you know? So this would be a nice thing, right? Okay, so if we want to... What's like the worst kind of speech that we could knock out? What do you think? Do you have an idea? Like, what's just the worst kind of thing that we would be talking about as devotees? Particular type? Offensive, right? Right? So actually, and this is something I'm trying to do. I'm like, okay, fine. Maybe I can't always talk about Radha and Krishna, but can I not criticize devotees, right? Can I just mark that as, okay, I'm at least, oh, if I see myself saying something that's negative about a devotee, unless I'm in some position where I'm responsible for that devotee's, or it just, it's an emergency thing. I mean, by and large, 99% of the things I have to say negative about a devotee, I shouldn't say. Because I probably have no good reason for doing it. So it's like, try to target, okay, at least the worst thing, can we at least become aware of it and restrict it, you know? And maybe if we catch ourselves doing it, at least cut it short. Usually it would be like a kind of 5-minute thing. So that's what I try to do. And then we can kind of move on. Okay, maybe now stop criticizing the non-devotees, you know? People aren't devotees, something. And then maybe choose, is there something particular that has nothing to do with Krishna and kind of a waste of time that we tend to talk about, you know? Maybe it's sports. Maybe it's movies, whatever, right? But I find like the stepwise approach, like you personally see kind of, and then you target that next thing. And then eventually, right, if you keep doing it, eventually you're going to just be left with Krishna conscious katha. Is that all right? Okay. That's nice. So Tamar Krishna is saying, before you find a fault in someone, find 10 glories, right? So that's a nice way to check yourself. If you're like, no, I have to find the fault. I have to talk about it. At least you... Right. I have to find the spot on the moon. Can I at least glorify the moon a little bit before I find the spot? Oh, actually, the moon is so beautiful. It's white. It's nourishing the vegetables. But gosh, that spot... So at least something, right? You take one step. And I encourage this with in connection with dairy as well. I have the same kind of step approach, because Bhaktivinoda Prabhu is here and he's reminding me about that talk, right? Is there something you can do? Is there something you do? Can you stop eating the ice cream? Can you stop eating as much ice cream? Whatever. So I do the same thing with any goal that I have that seems a little extreme or hard to reach, is just take a stepwise approach. All right, so... I think I'll stop there. Thank everyone for your attention. Hare Krishna.